Let's continue talking about dialogue now with friends or loved ones who are transgender, who identify as transgender. That is a hard conversation. The first really hard conversation I had when a person walked into my office, and when I went into the waiting room, the individual went by the name Kim. And I thought, this is easily the handsomest man who has ever walked into my office. Chiseled features, big muscles, athletic shirt. And I thought, well, this is probably a gay model or maybe even someone in the adult entertainment industry. I don't know. But obviously a very masculine, handsome male. And so I ushered Kim into my office and said, can you tell me a little about your situation and what you're looking for? Kim said, my situation is I was born female. I have lived as a man for the past 20 years. A couple weeks ago, I went to the Harvest Crusade. I got saved. Now what do I do? And I realized this is going to be one of the hardest conversations I've ever had, because to me, the truth seems very clear, but very, very, very hard. And I began the conversation by saying, I believe our God knew what he was doing when he formed you in the womb as a female. And I believe, having been born again, you are called by God to do, among other things, a re-embracing of what he created you to be. And I would like you to start not by saying, I'm going to learn to put on makeup, I'm going to wear high heels, I'm going to act like a Barbie doll, but just to embrace the fact that what you are is what you have always been, a woman created by God. Well, lots of us now have a Kim in our life, don't we? And if you don't, at some point you probably will. So I want to talk a little this session about how to dialogue with people who identify as trans. Let's clarify our terms, first of all. When we're talking about transgender, we may be talking about sexual assignment, that is the sex someone is given at birth, the sex determined at birth. How important is that? It is all important. It speaks to created intent. You know, it's interesting to think about this. It's probably the first thing ever said about you. It's a girl. It's a boy. Maybe before you even had a name, probably before you had a name, you know? Oh, maybe not. I mean, my wife and I picked out names in case. Well, if it's a girl, we'll call her this. If it's a guy, we'll call him this. But by and large, the first thing I said about both my sons, it's a boy. It's a boy. And then we took it from there. That, to me, is how significant our assigned birth is, the sex determined at birth. Our gender identity is largely the personal experience of the gender or sex, the sex we were born with. How do I experience myself as a boy? How comfortable am I with that? How at home do I feel in a male body? Gender dysphoria is a clinical term meaning unease or general dissatisfaction with the assigned sex. Generally, people who are what we used to call transsexual, now we call transgender, experience gender dysphoria. I am at odds with the sex that I have been assigned. There is a conflict between what I am physically and what I feel I am. That's a conflict. Now, traditionally, if someone had that conflict, it was understood that the problem is the conflict, not the body. Now we have reached a point where we are saying the problem is not the conflict, the problem is the body. You are correctly identifying yourself as this sex, but your body is the problem, and thereby that is what needs to be corrected. However, when we talk about transgender now, the term has morphed so much. By the way, it is exhausting, isn't it, trying to keep up? How many more letters are we going to add to this thing? LGBTQA, blah, you know. And how many times do we have to revise our understanding of what a word means? Transsexual used to be the term we used, then gender dysphoria, then transgender. Now, transgender has broadened from referring to transsexual to anyone who is outside the assumed binary, anybody who doesn't relate well to the cultural expectation of female or male, can now identify as being transgender. So if somebody is a transvestite, sexually aroused by putting on clothing of the opposite sex, a drag queen for entertainment purposes, impersonating a member of the opposite sex, or genuinely transsexual, or in other ways non-binary, all of that is under the umbrella term transgender. So honestly, if somebody says to me, I'm transgender, I like to begin with inquiry. Can you help me understand better what your definition of transgender is and how you fit that particular definition? Now, the position of the believer towards the transgender, of course, should be one of compassion, balance, and stewardship. Compassion. Jesus was moved with compassion when he saw people with any kind of a disorder. He was moved with compassion. Let's land there just for a minute, okay? Somebody who really believes they're in the wrong body. I can't even relate to the torment. Someone who really feels uncomfortable with the body they've been assigned and doesn't know what to do about it and feels like some people see him or her as a freak, feels alone in the experience, knows that many people will disapprove, even knows that it's going to break mom and dad's heart when I come out and declare myself that way. I mean, that is a lot of pain. And I don't want to be so into my position, well, I believe that's wrong, that I'm not able to grasp the enormity of the pain of the individual who is in the position of saying, I am transgender, so I want to be moved with compassion to recognize I am talking to a person, not an issue. I know there are issues, but this is a real life, flesh and blood human being I'm dealing with, not just an issue, you know? And I want to recognize that the torment has tremendous ramifications. I think, for example, of many studies you can Google or go on the internet or look up YouTube channels and see what the statistics are on the mental health problems, the emotional dynamics involved in this. I remember, for example, one study in Sweden just a couple of years back, 324 patients compared to the general population, 324 transgendered patients, 19 times the state of completed suicides, 19 times more than the general population, 3 times the rate of general mortality, higher rates of inpatient psychiatric care. I mean, you're talking about high rates of every form of substance abuse and emotional disorder among people who have this disorder as well. Am I trying to say I believe transgender people are crazy? No. But I believe there are profound psychological problems that accompany the attempt to be something you are not. We are also experiencing something different, though, today that is worth mentioning. We are talking about transgender, the condition by which someone is in some way at ease with the body that they inhabit. But there's also something I call transgender, a trend, transgender, by which people are declaring themselves transgender, not because they necessarily feel they are in the wrong body, but because they are finding there's quite a payoff to be had by identifying yourself in that way. I do believe there is such a thing as social contagion. We know there is. For example, in its darkest form, social contagion has driven a lot of teens to suicide. When you have clusters of teen suicides happening around the same time and sometimes in the same area, that's social contagion. You had a terrible example in American history of social contagion in the town of Salem, when a bunch of girls were egging each other on to say, we are seeing the witches and we are seeing the demons speaking to the witches, and we cluster together and we make these claims, and 19 innocent people were put to death because of that. Social contagion. And I believe much of what we are seeing qualifies as what is now known as rapid onset gender dysphoria, when people are basically adopting an identity that offers some form of a payback, even if it doesn't represent an absolute condition. Now think about what happens when people come out, especially, say, a teenage girl on social media. I've discovered that I'm trans. Henceforward, I want to be called Howard. My parents may not misunderstand me. People may disapprove, but I'm going to take this stand. What do you think is going to happen to that girl? Validation. Applause. You're brave. You're independent. You're going against the power. You're speaking truth to power. Be who you are. Live your truth. We're all for you. Well, what can we do for you? The teachers will validate. The psychiatric industry will validate. Politicians will validate. For heaven's sake, the current commander-in-chief has even said specifically, one of the best things parents of transgender kids can do is affirm their identity. With all of that affirmation, shoot, when I was a confused teenager, I think I might have signed up for that. Not because I ever really thought I was female, but just the benefits going along with that can be ginormous. Not to mention the fact that what is the adolescent time of life, if not, among other things, a time of confusion, a time of trying. You try different hairstyles, you try different clothing styles, you try different tastes, you try different even career choices in your late teens and early 20s. Because that frontal part of the brain is still being formed and is not fully formed. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. And there's nothing wrong at all with the fact that kids change their minds a lot and they're not sure whether they want to be this or they want to be that. It doesn't mean there's anything weird about them. It means they're going through adolescence. That's perfectly okay. I remember when I was a kid how many different styles we had and how many different trends we went through. But the point is, it was not assumed that we had the wherewithal to make permanent life-changing decisions at that age. And the church's position as we speak prophetically to the culture is people have the right to make that decision later in life, even if we disagree with it, and we do, but they don't have the wherewithal to make it at this time. Because statistics do show that if we leave kids alone and do not encourage them to pump drugs into their body or reconfigure their bodies, a high percentage of them will simply outgrow what I call the transgender phase by the time they're in their late teens or their early 20s. So for all of those reasons, I do believe that the church needs to take a clear position on this and confront what I believe is an evil going on in a culture which is encouraging children to make life-altering decisions that many of them are going to later regret. We also want to speak with balance. With balance, as Peter said, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. What's that got to do with transgender? I think it has plenty to do with it. It's about sin, and we all understand that. Now, I'll grant you there are some sins I don't understand, but I understand sin. And I must keep that in mind as I'm conversing with a transgender person. So I can say with integrity, I do not understand your struggle, but I understand struggle. And that's basically what we're saying. A mystery to us is the reality of some sins we don't relate to. Now, there are universally relatable sins, aren't there? We all can relate to the desire to punch somebody out. All of us can. We can all relate to the desire to lust or to lie or to speed or to cheat on our taxes or whatever. All of us can relate to those sins. There are some sins that are experienced only by a minority. So perhaps when you read the book of Leviticus for the first time or the book of Deuteronomy, you had the same reaction I had. Somebody really wants to do that? Are you kidding me? No, somebody does want to do that. Not most people, but some, you see? Now, a lot of people would look at my own life and say, are you kidding me? And I don't blame them because I had what can be properly called unnatural desires. So I'm glad for anybody who can't relate to that. Good. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But the reality is there are some sins experienced only by the minority. Now, they all come from the same root, fallen human nature. But there are some manifestations of fallen human nature that are very mysterious to us. This is one of them. This is why when I'm talking to parents of trans people, I always say, no, don't go on an archaeological dig to find out what you did wrong. Because it's not that simple. I've known many homosexual men and lesbian women and transgender people who were raised in very loving homes, had very healthy lives, and had no overt trauma. Go figure. And I've known others who were raised in very abusive situations or had terrible traumas. So sometimes you can connect the dots, sometimes you can't. Which is why I always say to the people who I counsel, the how is more important than the why. How I deal with my feelings is more important than understanding why I have them. If I can understand why I have them, good, that will help. But ultimately, I still have to determine the how. How am I going to deal with them? So for all those reasons, we want to have a balanced voice and we want to be good stewards. Be prepared to give an apologia, 1 Peter 3:15. Be ready to give an answer. Here's the big challenge. Let's keep this in mind. You and I are not only called to be friends with people and to love them and to connect with them. We are called to be all of that. We are also called to be stewards of truth. Now the challenge is, how do I be a good steward of truth with the person I love who is transgender? And that's when I try to start reasoning with that individual. This is what I had to do with Kim, because Kim raised some very important questions as we were talking. Kim said, okay, you're telling me that God made me female. I'm telling you that by the time I was conscious of anything, I knew I was male. I felt it. I related to boys. Everything about me was masculine. That is what I have always been. So either God made a mistake or God is cruel. And I had to think, okay, don't throw out the bumper stickers, kiddo, because this is a woman in genuine pain and I don't blame her. Because I knew that in her case, this whole idea of, if you want to follow me, take up your cross and deny yourself, was going to have ramifications for Kim that I could not even relate to. I had been a homosexual man. When I repented, I had to make major changes. I knew I had to leave the city and the county I lived in because I had too many connections there that I could fall back into. I knew I had to relocate into a church. I knew I would have to say no to my sexual feelings. I had no guarantee that those feelings would change. I had no guarantee that I would not live celibate for the rest of my life. Those were all pretty big ramifications, but they were nothing compared to this. This would mean a complete overhaul of every aspect of this person's life. So I had to be aware of that. Now here's the catch, and the reason I'm harping on this. You and I have got to be sensitive to the enormity of what we're saying, but we must say it. We must say it with sensitivity, but we cannot let our sensitivity keep us from saying it. But we must not say it without sensitivity. Grace and truth. We don't choose between the two. We have to operate with both. And so I said to Kim, I fully understand why you feel the way you do. I would feel the same. Believe me, I would. And I understand what it's like to have feelings that you wish you did not have. When I discovered that I was attracted to men, I wanted to kill myself. I knew that would be a source of so much shame to my family, and I saw no future in it. I felt that way in the mid-1960s. In those days, saying you're gay could get you killed. So I said, let me try to explain to you that I at least appreciate the idea that you can have feelings you don't want to have. Now let's land there for a moment. I find it helpful to bring up to a person who is dealing with something difficult, whatever you know of your own experience through which you can relate to that person. I think all of us can admit we have at times had strong feelings we wish we did not have, and that there were things about ourselves that we did not fully understand, and there were even times God required something of us that we thought was unfair. That, I think, we can use as a way of connecting and explain, no, I don't understand the enormity of what you're going through, but in principle, I can appreciate some of it. I really can. And I will be the first to say, I don't understand why you have to go through this. I don't understand why you ever felt at odds with your body. I don't understand why you have had to deal with all of the years of rejection and difficulty you have probably had to deal with. But I do know this, we are called to an enormous turnaround if we are serious about being followers of Jesus. And that was the crucible for me in the conversation, was when I said, Kim, do you want to only believe in him or do you want to follow him? If you want to follow him, it means a denial of your very core. If that is what you want to do, you must understand that. Because no one builds a house or a tower or works on a project without first counting the cost. And I don't want to play any games about this. The cost for you is going to be very high. You are going to have to live in a way you are unaccustomed to. And Kim rightfully said, okay, well, if you are telling me I must embrace my womanhood, I have to tell you, if I start going back to church in a dress and high heels, I'm going to look like a big old football player in drag. And I looked at Kim and thought, I agree, you know. And that was where we got into an interesting point. When she said, I know what you Christians think a woman should be, and I know what you Christians think a guy should be. But what about those of us who don't fit that mold? And she had a good point. Because I said, when I call you to embrace your womanhood, I call you to embrace the fact that you are female. I am not calling you to embrace an identity like Goldie Hawn. If you are a woman who likes to play football and likes to wear sweats and likes a short haircut and likes self-defense and doesn't take any guff from anybody, you are a woman who likes to play football and wear sweats and doesn't take any guff from anybody. You're a woman. If you are a guy who does not like to play football and is not burly and you like poetry and you play a musical instrument and you're very cerebral, you are a guy who likes poetry and is very cerebral. That doesn't change your sex. The Bible does not bind us into some of the cultural stereotypes we've allowed ourselves to be bound into. And if we are promoting those stereotypes, then the error, I believe, is on us. So, for example, I look at the woman who is extolled at the end of Proverbs. Now, that's quite a lady. Her husband completely trusts her. She is a good wife. And what a mother. Her children rise up and call her blessed. She takes care of her household. She can out June Cleaver, June Cleaver. What a gal. But I wouldn't mess with her. She also bosses everybody around, and she's a businesswoman, and she's an entrepreneur. Good heavens. I don't know if I want her to bake me an apple pie or if I should salute her. I mean, that's a multifaceted woman there. And she's praised as a virtuous woman. But she ain't no pushover, is she? Now, David, I don't think I'd care to mess with him either. That's a warrior. That's a kid with so much attitude, he hears somebody is challenging Israel and pushes his brother aside and says, that uncircumcised idiot, that's the one giving us grief. Hey, come on, big boy. I think that's the boy we're going to be hearing from. He's an exquisite artist too, isn't he? The guy plays the harp so beautifully he can calm a madman. And the Psalms, Shakespeare should have been so Shakespearean as David was. Sensitive, attuned, artistic, a great warrior. Wow, you see? So I don't want to tell people who repent of these behaviors when they come into their church, we're going to try to bind them into a particular box. But we do want them to embrace what we know God has created them. They are men, or they are women. Their characteristics, there may be a spectrum, but their assigned biological sex, that is a divine assignment. Now, the man who has a lot to do with my being in this kind of work, some of you may remember him. He's the late Cy Rogers. He was a man who lived as a woman for years, and he retained a good deal of feminine characteristics. He was actually assigned for complete sexual reassignment surgery at Johns Hopkins. They stopped doing the surgery. He had his appointment called off. And then not too long after that, he was born again, began walking with Christ. And when he gives his testimony, it was an absolute hoot listening to Cy, he would say, and so when I went sashaying down the aisle of the church, the people there just greeted me, but they didn't know what to do with me, you know, because he was still effeminate, but he was a man, and he allowed himself to be transformed, and in the process, he married, he fathered a child, he was a grandfather by the time he died. And I still remember him going on to the Phil Donahue show when he was being interviewed, and a guy stood up and said to him, well, I don't know, buddy. You still look pretty girly to me. And so I said, well, I know I'm not Burt Reynolds, but I'm a long ways from pantyhose. And I thought, that's pretty good. You know, that's pretty good. We're not asking people to arrive. We're asking them to be on the trajectory God has called them to be on, which is what we ask of each other, isn't it? We don't ask each other to arrive. We don't want to ask that of them either. So I took it very seriously when Kim said, it is an enormous thing you say God is calling me to do. Does it really matter whether I'm male or female? Didn't Paul tell the Galatians there's neither male nor female in Christ, that there's not Jew nor Greek, male nor female, bond nor free? To which I said, of course, as far as our standing before God, there is no distinction, but there are absolute distinctions in what God has created us to be. There is male and there is female, and we are intended to be one or the other according to what God formed us to be. So in that sense, yes, it matters very much. Now, what we do, what our particular characteristics are, the way we express ourselves as men or women, that is unique to us, and we can find ways to do it without denying what we essentially are. And I said, I know you will retain, perhaps for the rest of your life, a number of what we would call masculine characteristics. And that is when, and I tried to say this, I hope I said it right, but what I was attempting to say was, Kim, when it comes to that, if you have embraced the woman you are in God's sight, He will care more about your character than your characteristics. God is not going to call you to look like a Maybelline ad. But He is going to call you to be honest, strong, loving, abiding in Him, and bearing good fruit to the best of your ability as a limited vessel, as we all must do. And sometimes you'll be misunderstood, and sometimes you'll be unsatisfied, and sometimes you'll get frustrated. But all I ask you to do is what all of us are asked to do. You will have to say no to feelings that you have to say no to that seem very natural of you, and that also is a part of dying to yourself. Because what you must realize, and this kind of gets us back to Christianity 101, doesn't it? What you must realize is the old nature is present, though not powerful. And because it is present, it will beckon. And at times you will feel very hung up by it. So for all of those reasons, yes, I believe God created you, and yes, I believe God loves you, and God certainly did not intend for you to embrace something that you really can never be. And that is the great problem with all of this, isn't it? Even if we completely bypass the theological ramifications, why are we against people transitioning? Because they can't. It's not just because we believe they shouldn't. It's not that I'm just saying to a boy, no, you should not be a girl. I am saying, no matter what you do, you cannot be a girl. The best you can do is mutilate your body or ingest drugs or wear different clothing. But kid, if you die now, God forbid, in 60 years somebody exhumes your body, the DNA is still going to say, you're a male. So for all of those reasons, that conversation with Kim was a great eye-opener to me. So when I am reasoning, hoping to reason with a transgender friend, I always start with, do you or do you not believe you are created? Getting back to my concept of created intent, it is logical to believe that if there is a creation, there must be a creator. It is logical to believe that the creator had specific intentions in mind. And are those intentions evident in our bodies? This is where I believe we as a culture, and I think it's spilling over even into the church, we are often finding that we are being pressured to override basic intuition. And let me land on this for a minute, because I think it explains a lot of perhaps the hostility and the tensions that are rising between the Christian population and transgender people. There is such a thing as natural intuition. I am not saying we ought to be guided by that as the ultimate authority, because we ought not. But it is present. Paul told the Romans that even Gentiles who do not have the law of God do have His law written on their hearts and in their consciences. There is such a thing as the conscience, which either accuses or excuses the individual, the conscious. And along with the consciousness, there is a sense of intuition about what is right, what is natural, and what is not. Now, to me, abortion is one of the classic examples of us trying to override intuition and go for the counterintuitive. One of the most intuitive things any mother can do is protect the unborn life within her. And one of the most intuitive things we do is become deferential and protective in the presence of a pregnant woman. I don't think anybody taught us to do that. But when we know a lady is pregnant, we're deferential. What can I hear? Can I sit you here? And we're careful. And nobody in school after we had our algebra class said, and now we're going to talk about how to talk to a pregnant lady. No, we know. Heaven's sake, I was cleaning up my front porch and hosing everything down. And we've got eaves that kind of go around the roof area there. And I noticed, oh, there's a lot of twigs and leaves in those eaves. And I get up the hose and I'm ready to clean all that out. And then I see in the far corner, there's a bird hovering over a little nest she's building, and she's obviously about to hatch, and she's looking at me. Those eyes are huge, just terrified. Because everything in her was saying, please don't kill my babies. And my natural instinct, and I'm not a nice guy when it comes to my house. I'm not nice at all. But it was a no-brainer. Oh, of course, hey, no sweat, Mom. Go have the kids. We'll clean up after, I'm out of here, you know. That wasn't because I thought, I prayed about it, it's the right thing to do. It was just, of course, that's life. Get away, you know. And yet we are demanding that people override their normal intuitive sense of consciousness. Largely, I think that's what we're doing on the transgender issue. I firmly believe that many of the politicians, many of the cultural influencers who are telling us you ought to comply with transgender ideology, you should believe in the right of even children to transition, you should go along with this. I firmly believe if we hooked them up on lie detectors and said, do you really believe that? They wouldn't pass. But I happen to think, if I can step over into the cultural political realm just for a moment, where you've got identity politics, you got a big government dream, because there's a lot of bureaucracy in that, there's a lot of expanded power in that, and a lot of people are riding into millions of dollars and high political social influence on this issue alone. So of course they're not going to abandon that ideology, even if they don't really believe it themselves. But whether they believe it themselves or not, I think for most of us there's a sense of, I think we're like Smith on the torture rack again, you know? It's like, I see a naked emperor. That's what I see. But they keep telling me, no, the emperor is wearing a beautiful cloak. Okay, yeah, I'll call you Mary. I'll say this is right. We ought to go with it. Why? Because there's just so much pressure. I am grateful to say there's also some pushback, some very overt. I'm sorry to say that oftentimes it comes more from secular quarters than Christian quarters, but that's a whole other issue. But the point is, I believe there is an overriding of the intuitive here. And that's why I say when we talk about us as a created race, having a creator who had intentions when he created us, one of the ways we believe those intentions are evident is something as self-evident as our bodies. Our bodies testify to certain standards, don't they? Our bodies anatomically testify to a heterosexual union. You really cannot get around that. Our bodies testify to permanence. If I'm born male, I'm male. If I'm born female, I'm female. That is a permanent assignment. Common sense and common intuition tells us from childhood on, yeah, that's pretty much the way it works. And if we had not indoctrinated kids to believe otherwise, kids would come to that conclusion on their own and they say, I've got eyes, I can see what the body looks like, I can see how the parts fit, I can see what we are, and yep, you're either a guy or a girl. And if you're going to mate, this is the way you do it, to put it very bluntly, excuse me. But so for all of those reasons, when I'm reasoning with a transgender friend, I try to say, can we try to understand the distance between what you are telling me is an ideology and what common sense seems to say? Do you really believe that because you feel a certain way that makes you what you are? Now, let me backtrack a little, and I didn't emphasize this enough in our last session. Let me emphasize it now. You and I need to earn the right to speak into people's lives. By and large, we cannot simply walk up to somebody and say, this is what I think you should do. Now, in some of your cases, you have established relationships with people who are transgender. That's a different matter. You've established already some kind of a bond. But frequently, Christians want to just step in with our pronouncements, and we can come across like a bunch of Amway salesmen basically saying, I have a product I want to sell you. Let's seal the deal. Say that prayer so I can feel good about myself. Now, I know that's not the way we feel, but it can be the way we come across. It really can. There's nothing like the power of listening. I've got a sign in my office that says people need a good listening to, because they do. Now, I've worked for 36 years as a counselor, and for what it's worth, let me say this. I do a lot more listening than talking. I really should say I'm not a counselor, I'm a professional listener, you know, because so much of what's done in that office is me just saying, you've got the floor. I want to hear what you feel, what you fear, what you want, where you've been, where the confusion is, where the questions are, and where's the pain, you know? And I will also tell you this. Well, let me tell you two things. One, a high percentage of the people who come to me for counseling say, this is the first time in my life I have ever felt heard. Now, that says a lot about our culture, doesn't it? People are starving to be heard. I want to give them that. I really do. Wherever they're at, I would at least like someone to walk away from me feeling like he heard me. And secondly, that is how trust is built. I find that if I have shown to someone, I'm not just trying to get my spiel in here. I'm interested in you. I want to know you. I feel with you. I hear you. Your life is interesting to me. Your life is significant to me. And whatever comes of this conversation, I will be glad we had it. That's not the way you say it. That almost sounds like you're reading poetry. But that's what you want to convey. That's what your messaging wants to get across to the person. That's what you want to message to the individual. You start by listening, and then you bring yourself into it. And bringing yourself into it, I think, is helpful because, as I said earlier, if I sound to somebody like I cannot connect with or relate to anything that they are saying, I'm not going to penetrate very well. But when I say, you know, I've also had times in my life that I did not understand what was happening to me or why. And this is what I've learned so far for what it is worth, you know. And at some point, I try to go from the listening to the appealing. Pronouncing is, you're wrong. Appealing is, would you please look at this? Can I get you to consider something? And one thing I ask of any transgender person, if we've gotten that far in the conversation, is, have you ever considered that you might actually be rejecting yourself? You've talked about this as though it's a way of finding yourself, celebrating yourself, coming into yourself. But there are a lot of statistics out there that show that's not the way it plays out. Do you really think that this is going to be the answer? Because, what if it's not? Then what? Is it possible that in the midst of all of this turmoil, you are actually rejecting who you really are? Who you really are. And that's by basically, when you say to me, this is your gender identity, is it possible that what you call an identity is actually a confusion? Would you please think of that? And that can be the starter of getting someone thinking, which is what we always are shooting for, isn't it? So the church's response to the transgender person should include communication, community, and counsel, all three. Communication, community, and counsel. That is basically, if we want to make it even more simple, what do we want to say to transgender people? If you will let us, we want to talk with you. And then if you let us, we want to walk with you. We want to do both. We want to know you. We want to understand you. We want to hear you. And then if you will, please let us talk to you about where we stand on this and why. And will you please consider our points? We want to talk with you. Communication. Something I feel more strongly about today than ever. Christianity without communication is no Christianity at all. Christianity is hugely about communication. Hugely about communication. I mean, when the call that Jesus gave to the disciples had all to do with communication, didn't it? Go ye into all the world and communicate. Communicate. I have commissioned to you this mandate to be communicating. So we want to be communicating. And then we want to be offering community, of course. I mean, I hope we will take up a challenge to do something. Pray for transgender people to start coming to our churches. Pray for that to happen. Pray for them to get past whatever prejudices they have or whatever fears they have and come into our doors to hear truth that is being spoken. We're not saying allow somebody to disrupt the service, but for heaven's sake, in very few cases is anybody really going to do that. But we want them to come, and we want to offer them community. We're not offering them what we would literally call koinonia fellowship, because if we're not in the faith together, then we're not in real communion. But there is a sense of community that we can offer them and saying, you're welcome here. Come anytime. Now, when we are offering community, we're not offering necessarily compliance, but we are offering community. Let me explain the difference between the two. It's very important. When we offer community, we are saying, come here anytime. We want to know you. We want to be with you. We would like to spend some time with you. We would like to hear more about you. We want you to feel welcome here. We do want that. That is community. Compliance is another matter. And more than ever, we're going to be hearing these sort of demands for compliance from people whereby they say, well, I want to come to your church, but are you gay affirming? Are you trans affirming? Will you welcome me or are you going to hate me? If you disagree with me, then I'm going to feel rejected and so forth. So they frame it in either or terms. And what I try to point out is that really isn't fair, okay? Because we do have to adhere to certain principles if we're going to be the community that we are meant to be. Now, if I go to a Mexican restaurant, I would hope the restaurant will welcome me. Glad you're here. Everybody's welcome. Come on in. Have a seat. Good to see you. And I sit down and I look at the menu and I say, nope, I want ravioli. Well, you're welcome to come here. And we've got water we can serve you and you can have a cup of coffee. But we don't serve ravioli. This is a Mexican restaurant. Well, I want ravioli. What do you mean I'm welcome here? If you don't serve me ravioli, you're not welcoming here, me. To which the owner could logically say, Mr. Dallas, you are welcome here. If you don't want what we serve, but you want to come here, you are welcome to come and be here. But this is what we serve. This is our menu. We must stick to what we do. It is a Mexican restaurant. We serve Mexican food. Come anytime you want. If you don't care for what we serve, you can be here. You can have a glass of water or a cup of coffee and leave it at that. We even, I dare say, we hope sometime you'll try some of our chips and salsa. They're not bad, you know. But that's up to you. But this is what we serve. You are welcome to come here, but you cannot tell us what we will serve. We serve the Word of God. That is what we do. We are a church. If you want to come here and you don't want the Word of God, you are still welcome to come here. Come every Sunday for the rest of your life. We hope sometime you will try our chips and salsa because we think it's pretty good. But that's up to you. You are welcome, but we cannot allow you to come here and tell us what we will serve. So if you are saying in order for you to feel welcome, we have to be gay affirming or trans affirming, you are basically telling us that we have to adjust our menu to your taste. We love you, you're welcome, we respect you, but no. We cannot comply with you. And it isn't fair for you to ask us to. That's what we basically say when someone is asking for that particular compliance. So we offer community as well as communication. And yeah, we offer counsel. Of course we do. Now, one of the reasons I say this is so often people are shying away, and I think part of the reason they're shying away from giving the full counsel of God is there's a reaction. Now, I know sometimes I think people are just being intimidated. I think sometimes people don't want the tension that comes with speaking truth. But I think at other times people also are reacting to the way they've heard people speak truth in the past. So some of us remember when some Christian leaders would say to gay people, AIDS is the judgment of God on you. You're getting what you deserve. Well, now, in reaction to that, some Christian pastors understandably said, I am never going to say anything against homosexuality because I don't ever want to be seen that way. And I get it. I understand. But the past extremes of some people do not justify compromise on our part. They simply don't. Real important point, and I'll leave it at this for today. When Paul left the Ephesian elders, he said, I am innocent of the blood of all men. Why? Because I have not shunned to give you the full counsel of God. I have given you the full counsel of God. I have spoken the truth to you, the good, the bad, the ugly. And thereby, I am innocent of the blood of all men. Maybe you heard me, maybe you didn't, maybe some will walk away, maybe some will stick with it for life. That I will not answer to God for. But I am innocent of the blood of all men because I didn't shun, I didn't hold back, I was honest with you. I, to the best of my ability, spoke to you the full counsel of God. Now, if that is true, then what is the converse truth? If I do not give the full counsel of God, I got blood on my hands. I want to get along. I don't want disputes. I don't want hassles. But even more than that, I don't want blood. I want to speak it in love, but God forbid I not speak it.